Boardroom Bound, Episode 95, Invaluable Information in the Boardroom with Kyle Welch. Hello, and welcome to this episode of Boardroom Bound. My name is Alexander Lowry, and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership in the boardroom. My goal is to give aspiring and existing directors the tips, tactics, and strategies necessary to transform your confidence and build a successful career as a board director. Quick reminder, you can get all of today's show notes at podcast.gordon.edu. And in today's show, we're speaking with Professor Kyle Welch, and he has uncovered some fascinating information about corporate governance, specifically on whistleblowing. And if you're a director and you're thinking, how do I get the right information at the right time? You might have previously been thinking, I have too much to get through, too much to read, too much to study, less is more. Kyle is going to change your mindset. What he's uncovered is fascinating, incredibly educational, and important for all of us as we think about getting the right information to make the right decisions. This is going to be a show that just blows your mind. It certainly changed it for me. And a quick shout out today as a thank you to our sponsor, 2020 Women on Boards. You've heard me talk about them before. I am very excited to be leading their Boston annual event on Wednesday, November 18th, 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. But in a pandemic type world, this is a virtual event, which means I can be speaking to you wherever you are in the world. You're welcome to join us. 2020wob.com/Boston. You'll find details like the five amazing panelists that I get to moderate a discussion with. I'm so excited. Michelle Hooper on United Continental Holdings, United Health Group. Aaron Ossenmacher, who used to help run NACD and is Eileen Fischel and several other boards. Roy Dunbar, who I think is on five boards at this point, including Lexmark and several other big name groups. Ana Dutra is one of the leading members of the Latino Associate Corporate Directors Association on Electrobas, CME Group, and other boards. Caroline Say, who's on Coca-Cola and Morningstar, was put on these at a very young age. Absolute superstars in their space. And in addition to that, after that discussion, we're going to break out into small groups, and you will have a director coach in each room to be able to answer your individual specific questions about your board journey, your board path, what you need to do. Again, 2020wob.com/Boston, November 18th. I hope you'll be able to join us. It's open to everybody around the world. It'll be a virtual event, and I look forward to seeing you there. Let's jump into the episode. Kyle Welch, welcome to the Boardroom Bound podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to have you on the show today because what we're going to talk about takes me back to my job before this. So before I was a professor like you, I was also in the finance industry like you. I was working at Wall Street as a JP Morgan, 250,000 people. It's a battleship. It does not turn on a dime. And one of the things they were talking about in the beginning when you joined is, oh, and if you spot something that's not good, here's a hotline that you can call. And I remember thinking, because I've never joined a company this large before, the previous one was 10,000 people, thinking like, do you really call that? Do people really care? Does it ever get up to senior management? And then we lived through the financial crisis and we actually learned that JP Morgan is too big to manage and senior management had no idea what was going on down below. And you're going to really share a lot of really interesting insights that opens this up in a wide range for us. I'm excited about it because every board member at any company needs to make sure they have the right information, make the right decisions. And what you found is just so fascinating about all that. But before you became this professor and the School of Business and you were doing all that, you were doing other stuff before that. So give us a little bit of scene setting.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that story. So how I actually came upon this as a research topic is, so I'm a tenure track professor at GW, and it's publish or perish for me in my life as an academic. And I was trying to think of great things to study that they had really hard data to find. And I threw a couple ideas on the board, and one of the things that was at top of the board was, I remember that... when I was an intern at Ernst & Young, back as an undergrad, over the summer, there was a sign in the office for this ethics point. And I thought, that's really weird. What's that? And I remember reading the poster, and it was like one lunch that I had in one office, random office down in Southern California, and that's all I remembered from it. And it was the spawn of this idea. So I Googled ethics point, and I remembered it being a hotline. And I said, you know, it'd be really interesting if there was research out there related to these hotlines, these internal whistleblowing or hotline systems that companies use to discover problems. Because this data is out there and there's not much out there. And there's a lot of people that have a lot of assumptions about it. And as a fellow academic, I'm sure you're appreciating, one of the biggest problems we have about whistleblowing is that all of the our understanding about it is primarily from what is available in the public sphere. So if you're going to study whistleblowing and you don't have the data, what's going on in internal systems, you're basing your information and your research on lawsuits and news stories, which tend to be negative. Mm-hmm. And so it creates kind of like a bias in the sample. And so it was from that early experience that I kind of birthed this idea into this research. And that was just from being an intern. Yeah, of course, you're right. After I graduated, I worked at Standard & Poor's for a little while. And I also worked at the Stanford Endowment, helping invest in the university's endowment. But and actually, surprisingly, this research idea, this is one of the most important things I've worked on in research, came from being an intern and looking at a poster on the wall.
Well, it's funny how from little acorns, mighty trees can grow. So let's just put this into context, because if you are in the C-suite listening to this, or you're about to get in the C-suite, and maybe you're a medium, large-sized organization, there's so much to manage, and you're trying to get the right data in. Imagine if you're the board. You're not there on a daily basis. You're trying to get the right information to make sure that things are being managed correctly. And everything's got to get filtered. Think about JP Morgan. We had teams of people going through data, pulling out the right stuff, putting it up. How do we know what to present, when to present, how to present? Jamie Dimon, the CEO, would say issues don't age well. Make sure you're bringing things up, but you can't be an overwhelming volume, so only has so much amount of time. So in theory, the hotline is like the bat phone, right? So Batman had this red phone that would go straight to the top guy if he needed to have that conversation with him, and vice versa. In some ways, that's what the whistleblowing is. You're supposed to be, without getting in trouble, being able to call and say, hey, flag on the play, I saw something here. And your data has some really interesting nuggets about this.
So let me take it even a step further than what you're going to say. So because you're spot on, except for it's in a different direction. So as a director, one of the problems with being a director is that everything you're given is typically from management. It goes through a management filter, almost all the reports, all the information, all the updates. And so if you look at, like, so say, for example, the Lehman Brothers. Lehman Brothers collapsed back in the day. A lot of people had a postmortem on the Lehman Brothers and blame a feckless board. And the reality is if you look at the board members, these are really sharp people that were actually on the board of Lehman mm-hmm. Brothers. They're people that you'd want to have on any board team. And as the United States government dug into what happened with the Lehman Brothers debacle and with the board, one thing that was uncovered was this, is that when management was creating risk scenarios for their portfolio of assets, one scenario was filtered from the presentation to the directors. And that scenario was one where there was deep illiquidity in mortgage-backed securities. And what would happen to their portfolio if bond markets in general froze due to illiquidity concerns? And lo and behold, they filtered it because they said, well, we'll go bankrupt, everything will go down, and that's never going to happen. And so the board never actually saw this risk scenario that they actually ran. They filtered it out of their analysis, and the rose-colored glasses that were presented to the directors were what management wanted to project. And so as a result, these systems, these internal hotline systems, there's two attributes that are really important for boards to recognize. One is they are primarily responsible for them if you're a public company. The SEC has mandated that you monitor these internal hotlines and ways to do these reporting systems. And the second thing to recognize is that this is possibly the single greatest source of the future demise of your company that you can have. Very rarely will a CEO say, this is how we're going to go down, and this is what you need to know. It's usually, a lot of times, it's happening on the front lines. And it's happening from, somebody making fictitious accounts to make sales goals and then reporting something in their system. And the different type of pressures and different things that are happening in the organization, that's what will be filtered into these hotline systems. And these hotlines give directors a way to skip over managers who, technically, when it comes to push comes to shove, the number one job of a director is to hire and fire the CEO. And when it comes to actually finding out what's happening in the organization, these systems enable directors to actually get the straight cut of what's going on and problems in the organization. And also on a macro level, they're looking at macro analysis on how many reports they get and things like that to get an overall general sense of the culture of the organization, which is super, super important if you're a director to know, you know, what kind of teams are problems teams are facing.
And this is important. Let's put this into context, because you imagine that you're a director of a large public company. We'll just say JP Morgan, right? And you're coming a few times a year to the headquarters office in New York, and you're going to have 1,000 pages of reading at a company like that to get through. And generally, your mindset is like, oh my gosh, how am I ever going to get through all this? Wouldn't less be more? Your argument is less is not more. Less is less.
So you're going to get 1,000 pages of things to read, and I don't know if you mean like things from management or things in the system. Which one are you referring to?
I'm thinking the management, right? All the materials you've got to read for all of your various stuff.
I would say reports from management, generally speaking. I mean, I've been in these kind of meetings as a director and sat down and it's obvious what management wants to paint a good picture. Period. Of course. And you have to expect that as a director. And your job is not to make the CEO happy your job is to be aware of problems and identify them and make sure the organization, your fiduciary duty is to manage that aspect of it. And of the things that you could focus your attention on, what I'm going to say, which a lot of directors might be new to them, is that if you are genuinely looking out for your fiduciary duty and problems at the firm and making sure that you're covering your bases, these hotline systems are the single greatest source to identify fraud and problems in the firms you have been called to direct. They are more powerful than any other internal reporting system. And I'm an accounting professor, and so I take my numbers very seriously. These systems, if you look at certified fraud examiners and the surveys they do, if you talk to internal auditors, you talk to external auditors, when things are identified that are problems in the organization, just from an accounting standpoint, we're not even talking about human capital stuff, right? Human capital is far more valuable and far more problematic. I mean, you start having a brain drain in your organization, that is a big problem because it's really hard to replace that, right? But just from a fraud standpoint, you talk to anybody from uncovering fraud or asset theft, the way it's discovered is these systems, these hotline systems, and it's not even close. It's not even close as far as what other things it uncovers. And so our data set, so let me wind back and tell you what we studied a little bit and what we did, because that might help the listeners understand a bit more about where I'm coming from on this. So I was sitting in my office and I said, well, I need to come up with a great research idea. So I reached out to this company, Navex Global. They manage, you know, the majority of large corporate and private accounts across the nation. There's nobody like them as far as in size goes. And so I reached out to them about 4 years ago, and I said, hey, you know, I'm interested in doing research. All the data on reporting information is kind of biased because all we have is the failures. And, you know, anytime a firm, you know, no firm's going to come out publicly and say, hey, we fixed this problem, because there's no real benefit to them. They're like, well, you had a problem in the first place. Why are you even, like, it's like a weird PR move. And so I said, look, there's a real opportunity here to actually do some research and to see if these systems even add value. What's the story of these systems? And so I reached out to this company, Navex Global. They basically said, well, you know, go pound sand. They told me initially. They said, yeah, right. We're never, you know, this is too sensitive.
Proprietary data.
And then what happened over time was, is I said to them, I showed them how we could do research using this data without releasing any names or subject matter or actual events on what happens. Basically, what I got from them and what I got to use for the research, I should say, is a bunch of ones and zeros that describes number of events, frequencies, and types. And it's nothing that can be extrapolated into anything. It's actually, unless you know how to use, you know, data and have taken some econometric classes, it's all quite boring to everyone else. But for somebody like me, it's amazing because what I got was data over time by industry and by company. And I was able to match that up with a lot of other public data. And then we could come out with some really kind of like major cause and effect consequences for what's going on in organizations. And so if you don't mind, could I go through those really quick?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Would that be okay?
Please, yeah.
Okay, great. So let me ask you this. All right, so I'll ask you this as like kind of our some of the findings that we got from this is that so which company would you generally, and you're a professor, so don't game theory me on this, okay? So just think straight off your head what you're thinking. Which company would you rather lead, one with more issues reported through your system or less?
I'd always rather have more data to react to.
Oh, you'd always like to have more data in your system. And so explain to me your thinking on that.
Well, So if I'm running JP Morgan, right? It's too big for me to manage individually. I have tons of people out there at all sorts of different levels. I have no idea what's going on down below. That's a way for me to get data back up above that I can then react to and do something with if I need to. I may not need to do anything with it. It might validate everything's working perfectly.
That's right. So what we did is we took this. So I've got three questions along these, and I'll go deep into this one first. Is that if you ask the average person on the street, which firm would you rather lead, one with more problems reported in the hotline and system or one with less? The average person probably would say, I want fewer reports because they think the number of reports is related to number of problems. And that's not like a perfectly natural like thought to have that. But the problem is that that's not what actually plays out in the data. It turns out firms that have more reports are generally better in a lot of ways. And the more reports and feedback that you have from employees are basically a proxy for a lot of different high quality things in an organization. It's highly correlated to, profitability in the firm, age of the firm, corporate governance. So a more entrenched firm will usually have less using Buffcheck's entrenchment index. We'll have less across the board. And then on top of that, what we did is we looked at outcome measures, and we found that firms that actually have more of these reports have fewer material lawsuits reported in their 10K, and they have lower settlement amounts. And then they also have fewer government fines and lower settlement amounts. And when I say lower, there's a lot of models for analyzing what reduces lawsuits for firms. This is the single strongest variable for having a negative correlation, or positive or negative, but negative correlation for lawsuit avoidance and for settlement amounts. And the same is true for fines and government fines. And so the data plays out just like you're thinking, in the sense that the more information, the better. Generally speaking, that's what you want in compliance. The more information, the better. And a lot of people push back and they say, what am I going to do with, this report that's about somebody's red stapler being moved? Well, guess what? You're going to have to deal with that. And it's just one of the things with managing these systems is that you can't, what you want is all the information and as much information as you can get, and a lot of training around, the types of things that you should report in there. Red stapler moving, that's probably something you maybe talk to your manager about, as opposed to maybe put in the system. And then, something where you think that, there's something a bit more going on or that your manager might not hear you on, then yeah, put it in the system. Training is super crucial in it. But that's like a big counterintuitive finding that I think is helpful for directors, because if you're sitting on the audit committee and you see that you have a lot of reports and you see you have more reports than the industry average. So one of the key managerial things to do as a director is to look at the number of reports and compare it to the industry that you're in and maybe a subset of competitors. And if you do that, what you can do is you say, well, we have more reports. And a lot of, I've heard compliance officers say, well, the directors think that we have more problems. How do we get that number down? Hmm. And it's very easy to get the number of reports that come into a hotline down. You just change the number.
Change the number.
Don't tell anybody, right? Like, that's the easiest way to get that down. And so, that's the nature of it. So that's one of the key findings that we got from that.
And Kyle, that makes so much sense to me, I think, in two different ways. So let's say high volume of reports, but many of them might be related to a couple of key topics, which just reinforces, let's say it's the stapler. Suddenly everyone's stapler has been moved and is missing. Well, that might actually be a problem. Like, you've got a staple thief. Okay, that's good. We can find that. We know that, as opposed to a random one. So think about it the other way. Instead of it being a report up to the board, if you have the hotline that goes to the engineer's desk where a consumer is complaining about something, after they get enough calls about it, they're going to fix it, right? Same sort of idea, right? So it could be a frequency of something, but also the idea that you have more calls coming in just means that the system is working, should hopefully give you confidence, even if you're getting some of the calls are not the right ones. You're getting reports that tells you when the time you'll need it is there. I think that's a good thing too, right?
Yeah. It's these systems are more, instead of looking at it as a barometer for problems, directors and managers, based on this research, I came in fully open to whatever correlation. I'm not paid in any way by NABEX or anyone else. GW, brings home the
Well, they might want to pay you now because you're advertising for them perfectly.
No, they do really love the findings in it. They put me out a fair amount for themselves, but there's complete objectivity between us. There's nothing between us other than a mutual interest to discovery on this. And so, but in looking at this, you could see a director saying, how do we get these down? And really the right question to ask is that if you have an increased number of reports, you first say, great, we have a system where compliance officers and HR people are doing their job. They're training people. Now the next question is do we have enough resources do you guys feel overworked? Do we have enough resources to capture all of these reports and to make sure they're dealt with appropriately? Because that is the next question. And you really want to make sure that compliance officer is someone that is reporting directly to this audit committee, a subcommittee, or directly to the board. What you don't want to have is an opportunity for management to do an en route and get in front of that compliance officer, because at times compliance gets in the way of sales at certain points in certain growth. One of the first things that comes out of the way gets thrown out when you're growing your teams is certain compliance attributes and certain land grab sales opportunities. And the important thing as a director is to make sure that you're getting the straight cut of what's going on. So, yeah.
And Kyle, I think it's also important for us to paint for our audience a picture of what it might look like. So for example, let's say there's three lines of defense, right? When you think about who is spotting things, and the phone calls and reports are related to this, but some way on the side. So if you think about the first line of defense, if you think about this, the business hopefully self-identifying their problems and in solving them. And after that, maybe you have your risk or compliance people that are seeing things and solving it. Okay, ideally you'd caught it yourself, but we're still glad they caught it if we didn't. After that, you've got your internal audit unit. Now, frankly, you're probably going to get written up. The CEO is going to see this. We're going to have to solve it. That someone's going to be, might get slapped on the wrist. But still, we're glad we solved it before it goes out and the government finds it outside of us, right? That's still not the best scenario. So in some ways, the hotline, depending on where it falls in this, could have been caught at any of those. But we're glad we caught it internally in some ways. Is that the way you think about it?
Oh, that is the way to think about it. The findings basically say this, and as a fellow academic, you'll appreciate this. There's some people out there that think if you just get the right teams together, you're not going to have problems. And what the findings show, what the data shows, is that no matter what organization you're managing, you're going to have problems. I mean, lately we can see that even church organizations have problems, right? And so there's nobody that's immune for human capital problems. Everyone's going to have human capital problems. And the question is, are you going to see them or are you going to cover your eyes? And these systems enable you to see them, and they are typically the first line to go to in the defense of these things and the discovery of them. And it's almost it's kind of counterintuitive how they work too. So some of the other things that we found related to this relate to how these things get uncovered, because we were prompted based on some of the happenings with the recent inquiry to look at different types of reports and what information is in reports. So we didn't get actual details of reports, but we like the text. We didn't get any text, but we did get like whether somebody identified as having secondhand or firsthand information, meaning somebody saw a document or heard about something versus witnessing something and being there. And we did analysis of that. And another counterintuitive kind of finding we got was, so if you ask the average person, which report would you trust more, or if you were a compliance officer, which report would you prioritize investing in first, one with firsthand information or a report issued with secondhand information? And this was surprising to us because we didn't know what we'd get when we looked at this. We thought we just had no clue what we'd get. And so when we did the analysis, it turns out secondhand reports get substantiated about 50%, have a 50% higher likelihood of getting substantiated, more so than firsthand reports. And when we ran the regression, we looked at it and we said, okay, maybe we did something wrong. Maybe something's missing in this. And as we did it, you know, we threw more things at it. It just was one of these results that was really strong in the data. And so we went to some of these compliance officers that have been around the block with these systems. And they said, oh, yeah, secondhand reports are golden. I said, well, what's going on with secondhand reports? And he said, there's two things. And so you have to think about this as a resource allocation decision. If you have... when it comes to noise and information, the problem isn't that there's not great information in firsthand reports. The problem is that you get a lot of them, and it's very noisy. So somebody could put something in for the red stapler or the thermostat being off, and then somebody could put something in there for, a sexual harassment claim, something that's pretty significant with managers, right? As a result, there's a lot of those different types of reports, and there's a lot of filtering. When it comes to secondhand information that gets reported, there's two types of filters that happen. One, people self-filter their own hearsay, all right? So people already doubt their own hearsay information. And so putting themselves out there by putting a hearsay claim that is, that puts themselves out there in a certain way about a problem that's going on in the organization, they're only going to do it if it's something that is that they see as being a significant problem, if it's there, if it's potentially real. And then the second thing is that the fact that there are fewer of those frivolous claims, because I'm less likely to put in a frivolous claim that I overheard somebody else dealing with. I'm more likely to be objective as a second party and say, I don't think a red stapler is something we put in the system, or a thermostat is something we put in the system. And so as a result, these secondhand reports are actually pretty important when you're allocating resources to investigation. It's not that there's not great gems in firsthand reports. It's that firsthand reports, you're going to have to dig a bit more to find them. And this is one of those things that we just totally counterintuitive, blew our minds when we saw it. And it makes sense when you think about the nature of reporting, too, is that an event might happen, and just because an event happens doesn't mean you're going to get firsthand reports. So, for example, I remember growing up, frequently my sister heard about things that my parents didn't want me to do, and she heard about it through the grapevine, and sometimes she would tell on me to my parents. Now, she wasn't there, she wasn't a witness, and people that were there weren't going to tell on me, but my sister with hearsay would tell on me almost always. And so, as a result, the only reports my parents got were secondhand reports to make actions on, right? And so sometimes there's going to be events in an organization where you don't have firsthand information. And this is important, too, because we have government agencies and we have certain directives where people might actually think, and the intuition is there because we play the game of telephone, and, you go from one person to the next, and then the message gets distorted, and we think, oh, this is how these systems are going to work. Turns out this is not how the information enters the system, and it's not how the system works, in the sense that there is some self-filtering that goes on. There's less frivolous information, and sometimes the only way you're going to get an event reported is through secondhand reports.
So, Kyle, I'm pretty sure if I'm listening and looking at all of my listeners who are watching this show, now you've convinced everybody that they need to be making sure they're getting more and better information, varied information, all these different sources. This is essential.
Yep.
And we've talked about some of the behemoths, like a J.P. Morgan. We could talk about Wells Fargo. No question, slam dunk, large public companies. What about private companies or nonprofits? Do you feel like everybody should be putting these in place? What would the guidance that you would give would be?
Well, so yeah, so since coming out with this research, so I have an HBR article that's entitled "Throw Out All Your Assumptions with Whistleblowing," and it goes through the major findings from the academic research. And From it, I found that private companies, in particular, some are very much on board with this and realize that the value of these systems, in particular, you know, healthcare and other highly regulated industries, just realize that these are the ways that you identify problems to get ahead of them as far as certain compliance issues. And it's like you said earlier, either you fix the problem or it goes external. And you don't want this on the news, and you don't want the fine about it, because the potential for a fine, there are, you know, where this is possibly the biggest is in the defense industry. And if you get caught doing something wrong in the defense industry, the fines are like $300 million. They could be up to $1 billion in the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. And so if you're going to get ahead of these problems, it's just the cost benefit is just like, it's just worth it to implement these systems. And it's also important to keep in mind this aspect of it too. And everybody's had a job where they've been in a bad culture, in a bad work environment. And the problem is that a lot of the costs that we can't observe that would motivate somebody investing in these systems, there's even more costs that we can't observe, right? When somebody has like a horrible situation, they're getting harassed at work, or there's something that they feel is unethical, or this, that, and the other, they bring that home, and they interact with their family, they interact with their kids, their spouses, whoever they are, and it puts an edge on a lot of different things. And this is a way, we can't measure those costs, but this gets ahead of those costs. And so there's another important thing, too, with the data. So let me get to the last finding we got. And one of the last findings that we had that was pretty interesting. So let me ask you this. So we asked Navex for a number, and we said, look, we don't have any text, but could you just do a count for how many blanks are left in the fields of these reports? So if you go on to your organization and actually fill out one of these reports, there's going to be an opportunity to fill out a lot of information and a lot of different types of blanks to fill in stuff about what happened, what went on, who's there, do you want to be anonymous or not, all these other things are left. And so let me ask you this. Which type of internal report do you think is more useful? One with more details or more of these things filled out in a report, a more complete report, or one with less?
I'll answer that, but my guess would be it depends whether it's anonymous or not, right? So if something is anonymous with a lot of details, I would think it'd be incredibly useful. But if it has a name on there, I think it's a very different story.
So this is why this research is so important. So a couple of things. So first off, for anonymous reports, you are more likely to get more information, but anonymous reports are also less likely to be substantiated. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because once somebody submits an anonymous report, so Navex has this way for you to maintain your anonymity if you want to log back in and check in with the system and to have some correspondence with a compliance officer or something like that. But it turns out that a lot of anonymous people just put the bait in the water and then run, as far as like, look, I gave you, I filled everything out and go figure it out, right, type of thing. And it turns out that those reports, anonymous reports, are actually less likely to be substantiated, which is really kind of interesting because you think, you know, people wanting to be anonymous, it's super important. It turns out there's another form of anonymity, and we didn't realize this until we started, you know, running regressions and playing with the data. So it turns out that some of the most important reports in systems are the ones that have the least amount of information. And this is another thing where we kept on doing this, and we're like, oh, well, what's going on here? Like, we're trying to, like, figure out what's going on with the data. You know, maybe we always assume we did something wrong, or maybe we have the count wrong, or maybe it was formulated wrong. So what these are individuals that have seen something or heard something, and they want to talk to someone. And they don't want to submit any text anywhere about connected to them or online that says that they were the ones that gave the dish.
Huh.
And so they're going to submit into the system. They're going to put their name in the system. They're going to say, you know what, I found something. I'd like to talk to them. Something short. And then they'll wait to see who comes to talk to them. And when they come and talk to them, based on how comfortable they are with that person, they will begin to dish on what all the problems are and divulge everything. And it will be a face-to-face, in-person meeting. And they will usually request, hey, I don't want my name associated with this. I don't want to be tied to this. But I'm going to give you all the things you need to figure out what's going wrong. And this is super important because as a compliance officer, if you're allocating or if you're managing a system like this, first of all, a report with less information, you might think, oh, well, maybe the employees don't trust and there might be some trust issues. But the more important question to ask is, do we have people doing these interviews that can get the right information out of these? Because it turns out when it comes to these reports and these systems, these reports with less information seem to drive a lot of results where people have information and they're waiting for somebody they can trust to talk to. And the other benefit of that in these systems is it starts the dialogue with the individual where they say, okay, I'll give you anonymity, we won't use your name, tell me where I need to go to pick up the pieces of, you know, an asset theft, a fraud, or misconduct or harassment type of thing.
Fascinating. Well, Kyle, yeah. I am just amazed by how much you have proven, I'll use that word today, proven to us that we just need to be putting more time and attention to this and probably changing our mindset around it and really welcome this and embrace it and dig into it. So I've never felt more excited about the hotlines than I have after this call today. So
as a director, it would be something that it's something that for me, I'd want to look at regardless of the organization, almost every meeting.
Absolutely.
Not just on a, you know, once a quarter, but just every meeting I had with the directors and analysis where we are related to the industries, what's going on with the reports, where we are with the actual micro stuff that's gone on, and then benchmarking. So, yeah, appreciate it. Thank you. It's a nice compliment.
Well, Kyle, we were delighted to have you on the show today. I think you've blown some minds. I know you've opened up mine. And so thank you for sharing your insights and helping everybody listening today to be more boardroom bound.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That's it for this episode of Boardroom Bound. I really enjoyed chatting with Kyle Welch. I will admit that before this episode, I had not been very excited about the hotlines and the reporting places. I know they're important as a director, but I probably would have overlooked them a bit. They are clearly now one of the most important reports that I will want to read in my board packs. Very excited, and I'm glad we could share that with all of you. And remember to head over to podcast.gordon.edu where you can get links to all of the resources that we talked about today. And please know that the Boardroom Bound team and I are so proud to be your go-to podcast for all things that connect, prepare, and empower you to land a board seat. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss any of the high-quality content we're bringing to you every Wednesday. Thanks for joining me today. I can't wait to share more stories and strategies from brilliant business minds with you again next week. Remember to keep tuning in to be Boardroom Bound.